This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get going with some headlines. Mariners losing 5-0 last night, just no hitting whatsoever. But, of course, the highlight was Albert Pujols getting his 3,000th hit for the Los Angeles Angels. Series continues tonight at 6-10. Right now, in fact, that win for the Angels puts them in a tie with the Astros for first place in the American League West. Of course, Ichiro was there while kind of still running around trying to, you know, do his new job. He's not going to be playing the rest of the season. He is going to be a consultant to the chairman and also working with the outfielders and working with the team. Dodgers go to Mexico, have a no-hitter against the San Diego Padres. In football, Cliff Averill released failed physical. He is more than likely going to retire. I would imagine you're going to have an announcement with him as early as Monday of what he might be doing, and I would imagine he's going to have a big voice in this area and also continue to live in the Seattle area. I think that's going to be good. Three draft choices have signed for the Seahawks, including Will Disley. He was able to get his deal done, Michael Dixon, so six remain unsigned. In fact, the guys are signing around the league. Minnesota ended up getting six done. San Francisco just got three more done. So a fast pace for signing. Most of these are all second to fourth to fifth to sixth round picks. As far as the NBA last night, the Utah Jazz did not look good going up against Houston. In fact, two bad games last night in the West. It was Houston being winning 113-92. They lead the series 2-1. The Pelicans in New Orleans were able to come back with a home victory over Golden State, 119-100. So the Golden State Warriors lead 2-1 in that series. And those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. And joining us on this nice sunny Saturday is Dave Grosby. David, how are you today?
Morning, John. Good to talk to you as always.
Great to talk to you. And, of course, I hope you have a nice day planned. We'll get into that a little bit later. But, of course, mini camp is going on. I know that you probably won't be popping over there. Probably have too many other things on the plate.
John, it's practice.
Yes. But practice
There's
makes
nothing perfect. Going on over there.
Yes.
Are you still there?
I'm right here, yeah. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be kind of fun.
What's going to be fun about it?
What's going to be fun is just getting the chance to take a look at the rookies, kind of get opinions and stuff, and also just, you know, getting a gauge. Again, it's just football. I mean, I love football.
And you know what? I mean, what you got right now is enthusiasm. We talked to the Seahawks sixth-round draft pick yesterday, and, you know, you never forget the wide-eyed excitement of guys there for the first time, and that's what it's full of. It's guys who are excited to be there, guys who are starting their career. There's a tremendous amount of energy around. I think it's infectious for the coaching staff. I got a funny feeling if you asked Pete Carroll and some of those coaches, you know, what's secretly their most fun time of the year, I would bet this free agent rookie camp ranks pretty highly because you got guys who are trying to make it, guys who haven't been there before, young guys completely excited, everyone buying in. It's got to be a great time for the coaching staff.
Oh, no question about it. And particularly with the new coaching staff. That's another thing I probably neglected to mention. I'm just looking forward to see how the new coaching staff integrates with the players. I mean, you can see that Brian Schottenheimer has a very hands-on approach with the offense. Greg Bell talked about that. Everybody seems to be talking about that. And also Ken Norton Jr. coming back and being a defensive coordinator. He's going to be very hands-on.
I would agree. I don't know how that's going to be interesting to watch, but I'll take your word for it.
Well, again, it's like the little things you pick up. I still remember in training camp, it was T.O. was trying to make it on the team and didn't. And so he came in there, and the first play, Brandon Browner threw him to the ground. It's like, ooh, look at that. And then as the practice went on, Ken Norton Jr. was jumping in. He says, hey, go strip the ball from him. He'll get you the ball. It's like, and, you know, you see those little anecdotes and things like that. And that's what I think the fun part of all that is. And, that, yeah, again, it's me. But that's just, I mean, listen, I'm a football nut, so got to figure that.
I hear you, man.
Okay, so as we go into what's going to be an interesting phase, of course, one thing that is usually not talked about much, but it's on the docket today, I think you're into it too, Kentucky Derby.
Most definitely. It's not talked about a lot, you're right, but I'm a longtime fan of the event. It's one of the few bucket list things I haven't done yet, and those who are in the know are saying that this is a group of three-year-olds that might just be as good as the one that produced American Pharoah, who won the Triple Crown. So 20 horses running today. I always look forward to the Derby.
Yeah. What? Where do you think horse racing is now? I mean, because obviously it has an older, I think, audience. But I saw that some things anticipate that this could be a pretty well-rated type of Kentucky Derby. And maybe is interest picking up in the sport?
I would say probably not, John. The Triple Crown did boost it a little bit, but I think it is where it is. It's a tiny little niche. I mean, you've got fewer and fewer places that are actually running live racing. It's become much more of a, I was going to say gambling thing, but I don't really mean it that way. I mean, you can now play online. You can follow it anywhere you go. So there's not nearly as much live racing. I would say that the Triple Crown gave it a little bit of a boost, but not much of a boost. Now, that is different than here. I want to hasten to add that Emerald Downs is extremely successful. I think from comparison to other racetracks, it does extremely well. They have always done a fantastic job there of making it a family-friendly sort of environment. And all you got to do is go. Today would be a day where they'll have a big crowd out there. So there are a few places where it's doing well, and this is definitely one of them. But it's more than outnumbered by the places that aren't doing well, the places that have closed down, the places where the businesses fail. But in Seattle, at Emerald Downs, Auburn, to be specific, it's still going very strong.
Mm-hmm. Which is, I think, good. I mean, what appeals to you? Because, again, I remember I used to cover a lot of – I never made it down to the Kentucky Derby, but I used to cover both the harness racing and horse racing and was able to hit a couple of events. I think I made it to Belmont once. And it is fun because, again, you're outside. There's a excitement to it. I never really got into the gambling part of it. Obviously, I like the coverage part of it. Also was able to see the seamy side because I was able to work on investigative pieces on – race fixing and things of that nature. So, it is a very good sport. I know Pat, my wife, covered it at different times, but it's fun.
And it's got all elements in it. I mean, you talked about and all sports have got a seamy side to it, but on a race day, when you're covering the racetrack, the cast of characters goes from top to bottom. I mean, you have the owners who are wealthy and well-to-do, the trainers, the groomsmen, going on down the list. You get people who are living on the track, basically, the guys who are the hot walkers and guys like that who are taken care of. So you've got every sort of cross-section there. The horses are absolutely amazing, of course, absolutely amazing athletes. I'm always fascinated by the Secretariat Challenge. The Secretariat every year, since he won the Triple Crown, would have won the Triple Crown. Did you know that, John?
What's that again?
Secretariat, every year since he's won the Triple Crown, if he ran his race the same times that he ran in 1973, he would have won the Triple Crown every single year.
Wow, I did not know that. No.
Since he won it in 1973. And usually the margin is significant. Usually it's, I always keep track of it, it's something like 20 to 30 lengths overall. So, it's the one unique thing about it is in terms of horses, it peaked with Secretariat. I mean, American Pharoah was a great horse and won the Triple Crown and gave Secretariat Thumb on Time a bit of a run, but not that big of a run. He came within four or five lengths of it. That's the closest a horse has come in many, many moons. So, they are great athletes, but it's a sport that is kind of, its time has passed, I think, on the American scene. It certainly is not as big as it used to be.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know, and again, you probably don't have the number of this, but, I mean, what do you think the percentage of tracks that have closed down or become less involved?
Oh, it's significant, John. I don't have the numbers right, but I'd say 20-30% of them, and some big famous ones, Flamingo down in Miami, tracks in Chicago. Vegas has kind of kept it alive, and online wagering has sort of kept it alive. Especially, you mentioned harness, and I got a soft spot for that myself. In Sacramento, that was one of the first gigs I had covering it. But that almost exclusively exists for the sports books in Las Vegas. So it's a significant number, and it's just not what it was. It was at one point. The movie Seabiscuit did a great job of showing it when Seabiscuit ran against War Admiral during the Great Depression. That was probably the biggest sporting event in the country. You had people all over the country circling around the radios listening to that. I mean, there's no way that a horse race could ever be that again. So, it has been to the mountaintop, and it has declined pretty dramatically since then.
Do you think there's ever going to be an appeal to the younger audience in horse racing?
It's a good question. I don't see how, John. I don't see how you bridge the gap. It truly is what it is. I mean, there's nothing much you can change there. And I just, you know, it should have some appeal because of the speed of it and whatnot. But no, I mean, I'm wrestling with trying to think of if something could happen to actually change that equation. I don't see so. I don't see it. I mean, I think it is what it is right now. It's a very small niche sport on the landscape with a rich tradition. I mean, with a long, long history, and it's not alone in that category, but it's definitely in that category.
Yeah, no question. Now, again, it's going to be, but it's going to be fun today. I mean, do you watch the draws and stuff like that? I mean, probably you can't because you're on the air roughly when they're trying to do that on the Wednesdays.
I pay attention to it a little bit. I mean, I definitely pay attention to it day of and the week leading up to it. I like the pomp and the circumstance like you talk about. It's become an automatic that you got a 20-horse field all the time now. I do like all the stuff that goes around it, but you know me, John, I'm more of an event guy.
Mm-hmm.
So I look forward more than anything to just the fastest 2 minutes in sports, or the most exciting 2 minutes in sports, I think is what they try and call it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And of course, I mean, coverage is always kind of fun because it's that build up and all that stuff. And yeah, you know, but that's going to be interesting. So the Kentucky Derby is today. Meanwhile, on the NBA, it's kind of interesting that Golden State kind of went flat last night in their first game down in New Orleans, but Houston looked strong.
Houston did look strong. James Harden had a big, huge, fat first half. And you know, we talked about this on your show on Friday, I think, that you know, from Houston's standpoint, they had the best record in the league. They won 65 games. But they've got a big hole in their resume, and it's James Harden in particular who has it. They have not succeeded in the postseason the way they should have. And, you know, the Spurs have knocked them off, I think, the last couple of years. They're obviously gone. They made the moves they made in the offseason for one reason, that was to be a competitor to the Warriors, which they regular season, they sure look like one. But they're a team that's got to prove it in the postseason, period. And it was a good game last night. Their season is going to be determined by what happens in the next round, likely against the Warriors. The Warriors really did get hammered last night, though. And again, I think that's more, I mean, you see championship teams, they know when to take the foot off the gas and they need a little bit of a breather or whatnot. And that may have been the case in that game. The Warriors were trailing. I think they led by 1 point at one point in the game and then we're down double digits in the second half, and just, you know, it's they play good defense, but I've heard Charles Barkley say this. It's really pretty simple. If they're not making their outside shots, they can't win. Mm-hmm. You know, they can't win. And last night they struggled making their outside shots, and they got buried. I mean, they lost by 19 points. So that for New Orleans, you know, conversely, that game four they've got coming up tomorrow, biggest game in franchise history by 10 miles. And that's always cool when you have something like that. I mean, when you have a circumstance like that, it is always kind of neat. And, you know, that's definitely the circumstance in New Orleans to try and tie up that series and make it a three-game series, you know, would be dramatic. And that's a place where basketball has been for a long, long time and been left for a while and came back, but has never had the success they're having right now. So it's a first-time success story down there for New Orleans. And I'm definitely looking forward to seeing Game 4 because they were very impressive in Game 3. But I still feel like it's inevitable. It's going to be Houston versus Golden State, and it'll be Cleveland versus Boston on the other side, which I think is what everyone in the world predicted would happen at the start of the year. That's the thing about the NBA Finals, or the NBA playoffs, and the NBA success that is somewhat mystifying to me is that, you know, that this stuff was predicted at the start of the year, and it's likely to happen the way everyone thought it would. And yet it's not impacting ratings at all.
Mm-hmm. No, and I guess with the fact that, I mean, you've got Draymond Green challenging just about everybody. You know, it's like he'll challenge it to a fist fight, all those different things. You know, the personalities in the NBA have really come through over the last couple of years.
No question about it. And that's the entire reason why the league is having the success that it's having, I think. It's not just the personalities, but they have embraced modern culture. They have embraced the, you know, having guys bark at other guys on social media and things like that, even though I don't think the coaches have all embraced it. I think the players have. The way the NBA is sold is stars. It's barely, you know, you barely pay attention to the teams. It's all about the stars and where they're going. I've always felt like, and this is the one sort of benefit to having a super team, I've always felt like when you have the king of the hill, things are better, you know, for your league. When there's someone clear-cut to beat, whether they're wearing the black hat or the white hat, they are that is good for the league, and especially for the NBA, which has had its greatest success when it had dynasties going. So I think it's interesting that's what I think the league has done. They've made it about the superstars. The superstars participate in social media and are trendy and all of that. And I mean, you even got the Kardashians connected to the NBA in a significant way. So it's what's worked for the league, even though you would think on the surface that it wouldn't, because you know everything is so predictable.
Mm-hmm. No, and that's what's the fun part. And again, what I think is amazing and good for the league is that they've really, I think, hit with the millennials and hit with the younger audience.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. They have, and it's interesting to see. I mean, I'll put it that way to you. It's interesting to see because, you know, you've got teams that absolutely have no chance when the ball goes up. You know, most of them, and then teams that have no chance the playoffs when the ball goes up, and you know that sort of thing is hurting the rest of is potentially going to hurt other sports. I mean, you're seeing the quote unquote tanking philosophy happen in baseball. You kind of are seeing in the NFL with certainly the Jets and the Browns last year, you know, building up draft picks, trying to get ready quickly. Now the NFL has shown that it doesn't take 4 or 5 years to rebuild, but you can rebuild almost instantly in the National Football League. But it's not true in baseball and it's not true in basketball. But, you know, you find ways to be popular, and the NBA has done that.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I think is kind of fun. But, yeah, it's like, because really when you look at this round, I mean, Philadelphia is the one team that broke it down, built it back up. I mean, you could say tanked for a number of years, and they're now one of the first to climb up. 5 years.
Yeah, they tanked for about 5 years, and ultimately, you know, trusting the process, which is the line they kept using over and over again, worked for them. But, look, it's not a guarantee. I mean, in baseball, you look at the Houston Astros, the team that did that, and sure, they had a couple of top-round draft picks that have helped them, but Jose Altuve wasn't one of them. He wasn't a top-round draft pick. He wasn't someone that they benefited, they got because they tanked. He was someone they got for good scouting, and was not a highly sought-after prospect. So it's a dangerous road to travel. It can work, but there are certainly no guarantees that it's going to work.
What is on the Graz agenda this weekend?
We're definitely looking forward to the Derby today and hoping to enjoy some of this nice weather, man. I hope it's going to be a nice weekend.
I hope it will. It looks like it can be.
Happy Cinco de Mayo, John.
A happy Cinco de Mayo to you.
I'll have a margarita in your honor today.
Ah, that'll be great. Enjoy. And that's Dave Grosby.
All right,
and, of course, he'll be back on with Bob Gros and Tom weekdays 12 to 3 here on 710 ESPN Seattle. All right, let's load up the phone lines. Didn't get a chance to talk last week with the draft. We had the draft lounge, had a great time all day Saturday covering the third day of the draft, but we didn't get a chance to react to it. Let's react to that, talk about the Mariners, talk about Ichiro, all those different things. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Irish Mankey. Irish Mankey, how are you?
Hello, Mr. Clayton. Absolutely fabulous. And how about you? And, of course, always Mrs. Clayton.
Well, we had our first Friday night date night this year. We were able to go out to dinner.
Can you elaborate, Eddie?
Well, we went to over to Kirkland and went to Anthony's and had a nice dinner there. So it was our first one because, you know, with her trying to recover here for the first 4 months, we haven't had the opportunity. So now we're back into it.
Oh, boy. Did you propose to her maybe increasing the date night a few more days a week or whatever?
Well, we've been together for 29 years. I don't think that would be necessary. I mean,
love is always necessary, Mr. Clay.
That's true.
Okay. Well, wowie zowie, you've been gone for, it seems like, forever.
gone. I mean, I was just last week. I was on for seven and a half hours.
Well, I know the NFL draft business, but before that, it was those pesky Mariners interrupting your show.
Right.
So, funny thing happened in that draft, didn't it? The impossible, the unbelievable, the power of the Irish, Mr. Clayton.
Mm-hmm.
Two linemen, no less. Linemen, pesky
right.
little big guys from Notre Dame got drafted in the first 10 picks.
First 10 picks. Big surprise. Yeah.
Yes, it was. Well, I kind of hinted at that a while back, but you tried to tell me that didn't seem very likely, but that's okay. They are great players, and they got where they were meant to be. That's the way it goes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know the last time the Irish had two players taken in the top 10, Mr. Clayton?
When was that?
Famous player.
So,
are you there?
Yeah, when was that?
1993. Does that give you a clue?
And those two players were?
Rick Meyer, number two. And Jerome Bettis, number 10.
Okay, they went 1 for 2 on that one. Yeah, that was pretty good.
Oh. No, anyway. So, big plans today. Interesting talk on the horses, Mr. Clayton.
Well, thank you.
I think you and I and many other people are watching this generational flip happening where old is out and there seems to be new things going on with the younger generation to get their time and attention.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if much of that is sports related anymore, Mr. Clayton, other than maybe football. I think horse racing, like it was mentioned, is on its way out. I think baseball is struggling mightily for the youth. The only thing seems to hang in there is football and basketball.
Right. And basketball is, I think, gaining a lot of momentum.
They seem to have a resurgence, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Which is kind of interesting.
Getting back to big plans today. Oh, that's right. You're going out to watch practice.
Yep, got to do that. I mean, I was not able to do it yesterday, and so this is one where I need to get over there. We'll see if I can make it over tomorrow, but definitely I'm making it today.
What? I haven't been able to hear you during the week and stuff since the draft. I have been reading over the Internet that Seahawks didn't grade out so well with this draft.
No, they didn't, but they feel good about it.
Well, of course they do. I do like the idea of that San Diego kid. He seems to be maybe something special down the road here. They may
have Rashard Penny.
Good one there.
Mm-hmm. No, but that one looks very, very encouraging.
What does that signal for C.J. Procise, Mr. Clark?
I think he could be in trouble.
Well, that's what I thought, too. I thought this kid they drafted is his replacement.
Mm-hmm. No, I think because, you know, you can see that now they've got, he would be one of three backs that could be on the field for three downs. And so if he doesn't step up in training camp, I think he could be traded or he's going to be gone.
I was going to say, so this would be his last year.
Yep.
Show or go, as they say, huh?
Pressure's on.
Yeah.
He is talented.
Too bad. The kid just had a health issue, didn't he?
Constant. He was hardly ever healthy.
Yeah. What a bummer. All right, Mr. Clayton.
Okay.
Thank you.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Give us a call here as we get into nine teams on the field as we speak on or later on today with mini camps and all those things. It's kind of a fun time. And, of course, pretty soon we'll start getting into the OTAs, which, of course, is 10 of those per team. Those are fun. And, of course, it's all football. It's all good stuff. Give us a call, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Thoughts on what this team has done? Do you like it? Don't like it? Did they get enough? I know a lot of people keep talking about the offensive line, but I think John Snyder probably said it the best. Now, what he didn't say is the thing I say, is that they've invested so much on the offensive line that if they would have gone that direction this year, it would have probably been more dangerous because, first off, I don't think it was a great year for offensive linemen. John Snyder said that, particularly for tackles. And, you know, they needed to start working on the other parts of this team. They needed to start filling out the roster, which, of course, I think in this draft they hit most of the things that they needed. If not, there's still free agency out there that maybe they can do a little bit more. But I thought that was one of the good parts of what they were able to do because, again, you can only do so much. I mean, they have it's the salary cap. You only have 9 draft choices. You're starting with 7. You have to maneuver around to get those extra ones. But did you like what they do? 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Also, anything on your other team that's outside of Seattle that you might want to talk about? We'll get into that at 866-979-ESPN. So give us a call. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Calm. Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Sam. Hey, Sam, how are you?
I'm doing great, John. How are you this morning?
Real good.
Hey, it is time to talk NHL playoffs, my friend.
Okay, that sounds good.
Hey, are you watching any of it?
I haven't had a chance to watch too much. I mean, have not seen any of the Vegas games yet. Still need to get more into that. I mean, I'm looking forward to that Pittsburgh-Washington series, which is tied at 2, naturally becoming
right.
From Pittsburgh. I have a lot of interest in that.
Well, the Penguins are my team as well. We share that. And every one of those games has been spectacular. Tonight is obviously game 5, a huge game. I'm believing the Penguins are going to take it in Washington. The Capitals losing Wilson to that kind of cheap shot the other night has put us in a little better position. The Vegas games with San Jose have been spectacular. I'm sorry you've missed those.
No, but what's I think fascinating is that the games have been close, which I think is natural because again the way the sport is right now, goaltenders play such a big part of it. But I think there's renewed energy. I think some of the ratings have been up, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh yeah, definitely. I've talked to you a couple times about the NHL, and last time we spoke, you made a comment. I didn't have time to ask you to elaborate on it. You made a comment, and I was hoping I could get you to elaborate a little bit. You mentioned that you thought it would be better for the NHL to look at, and I'm paraphrasing what you said, but look at ways to increase scoring.
Yes.
And I have to disagree with you on that, but I'd like to hear your rationale. I mean, for me, I have seen many NHL games where the score ends up being 1-0. It's one of the most spectacular, exciting sporting events I've ever watched.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily agree that more scoring equates to, a more exciting product. Maybe you have a different take on
that.
Yeah, and more scoring
Well, and here's the rationale because I think you see it in all sports. Yeah, you know, when scoring goes down, people turn away. And again, probably you and I are more traditionalists than anything else, so it's not going to turn us away. But, it turns away, I think, the younger fans. I think you saw it a couple years ago in college basketball. I mean, they went through a lot of the analytics in that and it put more defense in there. Clearly in baseball, up until last year, I think, interest kind of drained because, the pitching just so dominated that, scoring was down. I mean, you have some teams like the Mariners and that. They were scoring 3.5 runs a game. That's not good. And, the offense generates a lot of interest. And that's what I think is one of the good things about sports. But when the offense is down, and of course in hockey, it's still, we can be traditionalists and watch the subtleties and, seeing the checking into the boards and, seeing the good defense. But again, without the scoring, that the novelty doesn't attract newer people because, what's the exciting part? When you get a goal. Okay, when you're able to beat the goaltenders. But now they're in a phase right now where the goaltenders have been so good that scoring has come down. And that's why as much as we as traditionalists may not be bad on it, others, I think, would like to be able to get back some of the scoring. But right now the hockey doesn't seem to be, pushing any of that.
Yeah, I see that. I see that point of view. Especially, I think the key word or key thing that you said there was to attract more fans.
Mm-hmm.
Because I even with my casual friends who know that I'm hockey crazy, they'll say to me, they don't score much. It's hard to watch. And I say to them, you know, you have to watch it a little bit more until you start to understand the nuances of the game and can appreciate the defensive aspects as well.
But here's the one point that I think tops it all, and you'll probably have to agree with me. Of all the sports, hockey's probably the worst for television because you're not able to pick up as much of the subtleties.
I have to agree. I've been very blessed. My wife and I get to travel a lot, and we've seen Penguins games in B.C., Vegas, and several other places around the country, and there's nothing like going to a game in person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the whole culture of hockey even, and I'm really excited about that coming to Seattle and the complexion of the change of the complexion of the sports environment around here. It's going to be very cool.
Yeah, and that's the one thing because, you know, and that's why in 2020 it's just going to be a great awakening to see the difference. Because, okay, you watch it on TV. I mean, it doesn't have the 18 camera angles you're going to have in NFL, even in college. I mean, you got, you know, a couple camera angles. I mean, you get one maybe behind the goal. You get a couple in the middle of the eyes in the rink and all that stuff. But you don't get the subtleties, and you can pick them up in a game. And when you go to a game, it's just so vastly different and so much more entertaining watching a live game than it is on television.
Absolutely. Well, John, I appreciate your perspective very much, and I hope you get a chance to watch that Pens-Caps game today, and, you know, let's go Pens.
That sounds good to me. All right, thank you, Sam. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jack. Hey, Jack, how are you?
Hey, John. How you doing?
Good. I'm doing great.
Hey, I find myself becoming more and more interested in the job of football NFL general manager as I follow the game over the years. And I'm curious about that 53-man roster number. I guess I'm just looking for some insight into how they came up with that number. And if there's any, like, desire in the league to increase that, because, you know, anecdotally you hear, I mean, I, without being part of the game, I just hear from the outside, like, it seems like the rosters are thin. It seems like teams want to develop their, you know, more talent. It seems like when there's a lot of injuries, you could use more players. How do they come up with that number, that 53 number, and is there any desire to kind of make it bigger?
Yeah. What it is it's gradually grown through the years, and it's collectively bargained. And what happens is that there's maybe a very small push to increase it, but not enough. Because what happens now, it costs more money. Because remember, I mean, you're trying to fill a 53-man roster, but injuries have increased to the point now where you may have 20 guys on the injured reserve list, and you're eating up so much money in cap room trying to fill those voids. I think one of the problems that can be fixed easily is like, okay, why don't you use the 53 players? Why do you have to have the 7 inactives? Because when you go 7 inactives, you know, you now have 7 offensive linemen. If 2 get hurt or 3 get hurt, then you're really in trouble. And then it shortens what guys could be available to special teams. Now, again, you know, you can see if they eliminate kickoffs that the thought of expanding the roster and expanding the active roster is going to go away because, again, you won't have as much opportunity to get the guys on the field without kickoffs. But, you know, 53 has grown because, remember, it used to be in the 30s. And so as time went on and you get collective bargaining improvements for the players that can get more jobs, then it happens. You know, the salary cap has now slowed it down. So I don't envision any time in the near future it's going to increase from 53. And what I worry about, if you eliminate kickoffs and don't have kickoff coverage teams, you know, now you're not going to have the need to try and add to the 46-man active roster.
What's the resistance to activating those 7 inactives? I mean,
this is an old school and it's pretty silly at this stage. You know, I bought into it probably 15 years ago, but in the last 10 years, no, because of specialization. You know, once you start to have the nickel and all the different configurations, you know, it gets more guys on the field. But what it is, and this is an old school silly thought, is that, okay, here we go. It's like the old school owners believe, well, if you have a good team and a bad team, what if you have the 53-man roster of the good team? Because their 7 guys are going to be better than your bad team at 53. And let's say, for example, you have 5 injuries on the bad team. And, you know, now you have that much of a difference because now you'll have 7 real good players that are on the real good team that are going to be better than and that. And then, of course, if there's more injuries on the bad team, then you're going to have competitive imbalance. Now, again, I don't buy it now. I think it's silly. But that's the old style thinking, that they thought it was a competitive thing where the good team versus the bad team. Now you put the bad team in a worse position.
Okay. Hey, along those lines, one more question. Is there, I've heard kind of every few years, it seems like the idea for some kind of developmental league type of thing kind of comes up. You know, developing, you always hear about the lack of talent at offensive line, the lack of talent at quarterback. The drop-off, you know, between the first and second guy there. Is there any push for, like, a true developmental league, or is the NFL just satisfied with this college system? I mean, I can't believe that they're entirely happy with that, you know, trying to convert guys from the spread offense, for example, all the time. You know, just,
well, actually, there's a push that's going on right now that's the best push probably in 8 to 9 to 10 years is happening. Bill Polian's involved with a league right now, and they're hiring coaches, and they're paying good money. They're paying like about $750,000, like Brad Childress, Steve Spurrier. I know that Michael Vick's going to be involved. There is a big push right now. It's going to be a spring league that is going to be more in the South. There's going to be 8 teams, and I think it's the Alliance of American Football. And I know if you go back on Schooled with a Professor, I mean, you listen to Bill Polian, because I mean, he was on with explaining, you know, what that was going to be. So, no, there is a push right now, and I think with Polian's involvement, you know, you have Chris Ebersol, he's already got CBS as a broadcaster. So I think this is the best push for a developmental league, and we'll see how it grows and see if it continues. But there is a push right now, and I think the Alliance of American Football is one that I think could be that developmental league of the future.
Okay. Thanks, John. Hey, just I guess I'll finally just end with this. It just feels like a really critical time for the league. The owners, I mean, you know, without telling them how to spend their money or whatever, but it just seems like they could really do a lot just spreading the wealth around, really trying to figure out, you know, making a few more people happy to try to kind of get this league kind of through. It's a real critical juncture, it seems like. And
no
so I feel like maybe kind of spreading the wealth might help with some of that stuff.
Well, there's hope.
Anyway, yeah.
Okay. Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, The John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Patrick in Kent. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, good morning, John. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. I am just really excited about Rashard Penny. And I'm just wondering how much of an impact he'll be making this rookie season.
I think a lot. I mean, I don't know. Pro Football Focus, I don't know how you feel about them, you know, because they're pretty critical, and maybe rightfully so, about the offensive line the last couple of years. But they think that they had him as the second-best running back, and they project him to gain something like about 923 yards, which would be a big, big impact. When you think about it, there was only 7 running backs last year who had 1,000-yard seasons.
And I'd like to know about your thought about him playing some special teams as well. Are we going to see some of that too? I just feel like he should stay in the offense more often than in special teams.
No, I think what they want to try to do is, you know, use him a little bit on a kickoff return team because he's so naturally good at it. I mean, he had 2 touchdowns on kickoff returns at San Diego State. He averaged 31.5 yards a return. He's such a natural at it. And so it just gives Tyler Lockett a little bit of a break so that he doesn't have to do it all the time. Now, of course, you know, the key to that is making sure they don't have many kickoff returns because, you know, if you do that, you're giving up too many points. But no, I like I think that's a good idea because it just gives you another option and another option that looks pretty good.
And also, Shaquille Griffin, how much impact he'll make in the defensive side?
I think it's going to be more special teams than it's going to be anything else. I think because KJ Wright is the starter, and if there's anything, and again, I think you want the time to learn and all that stuff. If he does well, it's not out of the question for them to put him on some packages and maybe some things like that. But I think, you know, he's going to have kind of a minimal role as far as, you know, what he does as far as the defense this year. But hey, if he does well in camp and so far he's off to a good start, you never know.
All right. Thanks a lot, John.
Okay. Hey, thank you very much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Craig in Kirkland. Hey, Craig.
Hey, John. How's it going?
Great. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. I just wanted a real quick question about what do you think about the prospects of Andrew Luck even playing this year? And if he does play, how effective do you think he's going to be?
I think he's going to play, and I think he's going to be very effective. I just think that there's nothing that says that he won't. I know that the fact that he's still not throwing is probably not a good sign, but I think they're just being overly cautious. And if that's going to be the case, I think just wait him out and see when that chance is going to be. But no, I think he's going to play, and I think he's going to do well. I mean, you hope, because for the league, it's good that he does well, and for the Colts, it's vital that he does well. So no, I think you can count. I mean, you can count on him, but again, until he starts to throw, you just don't know for sure.
Okay, and
also understand that they did not make a move whatsoever on a quarterback. I mean, they were content to have Jacoby Brissett as the backup. They could have drafted a quarterback if they thought it was going to be the case. Understand that Chris Ballard, I think, is a very sharp general manager, and so if there was going to be an issue, they would have addressed it.
Gotcha. And lastly, before I let you go, I'm going to hang up after this. What do you think about the Colts draft this year? Did we address all areas of concern, or are there any glaring holes?
No.
I appreciate
yeah.
the time.
Yeah, I mean, they addressed this, I think, some of them on defense and the offensive line, which I think for priority is good. But no, did they get all of them? No, because I think they're weaker at the wide receiver position. They didn't hit much in free agency. They need another draft to really shore some things up. So did they? It was a good draft, but again, still not enough. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. We will come back and preview a little bit of what the San Francisco 49ers look like in their mini camp. Matt Maiocco will be joining us. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.